Let's go to the phone line now. We got Kirsten Baszler with us. She's the superintendent of schools for the state of North Dakota, or as I like to say with my son, the Super Nintendo of schools. How are you doing? That's what we still call the superintendent, is the Super Nintendo. So how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I think that's a little bit of throwback from the 80s with the Bart Simpson, isn't it?
It is from the Simpsons. It is. It was Ralph Wiggum who said Super Nintendo Chalmers. And so it kind of stuck with us ever since then. And me being a pretty active father, those dad phrases and jokes never leave. They never leave.
They don't, and it's a title I will wear with pride. I love that.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this critical race theory, and I'll be honest, I do not know anything about it. I've heard some smatterings here and there, pretty polarizing from what I've heard. I got rid of my TV in 2006, so I do not have the news on. I don't have talk radio on. A lot of what we do around our household is by choice, not by passive. So, help me out with this critical race theory. What is it and how is the schools involved?
Sure. Absolutely. So I'll just kind of give you the Cliff Note version of it and stay pretty high level if we can. Critical race theory is a theory that actually originated in a law school in the 70s. And it essentially was a theory that was studied by law school students to determine whether or not our judicial system, our legal system in the United States was systemically racist, if there was a bias in the system of our judicial system. About 3 years ago, Christopher Rufo went on Tucker Carlson on Fox News and had done a six-month investigative report about whether this type of theory was finding its way into our K-12 schools across the nation. And what he found was some things that alarmed him, alarmed Tucker Carlson, and alarmed some of the viewers. And so at that point, it became a conversation in many school boards across the nation and in many state houses across the nation. In 2021, during special session, our North Dakota legislature had determined that they wanted to get ahead of this. They wanted to make sure that this wasn't going to be creeping into North Dakota schools. So they passed a critical race bill. And it really essentially, so as of November of 2021, North Dakota has a law that prohibits the critical race theory from being taught in our North Dakota school system, K-12 system. And that law specifically defines critical race theory as the theory that racism is not merely the product of learned individual bias or prejudice, but that racism is systemically embedded in North Dakota society and the American legal system to facilitate racial inequality. So that law was passed, and in that law, I think what's causing a bit more fervor right now, Jason, is because there's a second step to that law. The legislature directed me as the state superintendent to create administrative rules to help our school districts implement this to ensure that no classroom, no teacher, no professional development was being done that included the theory of critical race. So we just put out a notice early this week that said we are complying with our legislator's directive with the law, and we have created administrative rules, and there will be a hearing. There's just a first draft of these administrative rules, and there will be a hearing on September 8th where people can voice their opinions, suggestions, or any edits to make these administrative rules the way that they should be. We will take those suggestions into consideration, and ultimately the North Dakota legislature has the authority again. They will either approve or deny these administrative rules. So I can go into what those administrative rules are and why they are written the way that they are written, if you want me to, Jason.
Yeah, in just a second here, I'm writing my notes down. I had in my notes that there was a public meeting August 8th, but it's September 8th?
It's September 8th.
Okay,
correct.
So that's the first day of football, folks. That is September 8th, opening night of football. On a Thursday, okay? We have our fantasy draft on September 6th, so these dates are obviously locked in my mind. But, okay, so the critical race theory, before we get into some of these other parts of it, what would an example be, I guess? What would an example be of how the school system is either teaching it or avoiding it or not doing something in compliance with why this is in our, why are we having a conversation about it, I guess, you know?
So, and that's really the point of why we got to the administrative rules. We thought the law was pretty clear that no school would include any type of instruction on saying that the system, whether it be the education system or the judicial system or the employment system, that it was set up, that racism, that it was designed in order to advance and continue racial inequality. There are, what we've heard, some examples of some professional development where asking white boys in third grade to, you know, embrace their privilege and to really talk about white privilege. And some parents are concerned that some of the lessons that are occurring are making their children, who happen to be non-Indigenous or no, people of not of color, making them feel bad about themselves and feeling responsible for all of the racial inequality and the racial injustice that has occurred in our history, in America's history. And they're feeling that an eight-year-old is completely not equipped to manage the responsibility of 100 or 200 years of racial injustice. And so those are some of the things that our legislators are hearing are occurring in our schools. And so these administrative rules are being established to ensure that every school board, as you know, local school boards elect their, or local communities elect their school board leaders, and those are the individuals, those elected leaders, that have the most control over what happens in the classrooms over which they govern. And so this administrative rule will require that every school district have a policy in place where if parents feel that something is occurring, that those parents have a process to bring it to the school board, that there's a process in place to ensure that the professional development that is required that our teachers take, that the professional development isn't encouraging our teachers to teach in a manner, in a way that says their school system is a system that is set up to advance or continue, perpetuate racial inequality, that it's that racism is a personal bias, not something set up by a system, a governmental system.
It's interesting because I do recall this critical race theory when you mentioned it from the 70s. And I guess I thought it was supposed to be more of a college discourse, critical thinking type of a higher learning conversation,
It is. And it was intended to be. These are, as you mentioned, graduate students.
Yes.
Discourse. This is a complex theory that is being talked about, not something that an eight-year-olds are pretty darn smart. I'm going to tell you that. And I will defend this generation of students. They're pretty swift, but they're not developed enough to be discussing a government system or a judicial system or a work system that is that complex.
No, they're very good about memorizing and repeating and doing some of the learning skills from that part, but their hypothalamuses aren't even developed yet, and so they're not doing layered thinking and complex thinking. We know that that doesn't happen until, you know, your later teens and even in your early 20s.
Exactly.
So, yeah. When I look at this, boy, this is pretty complex. This almost borders into the classism part because, you know, there's all kinds of complex studies with, you know, whether they do stings in front of country clubs versus, you know, dive bars. Those have been around since the 70s and 80s. In my notes, I wrote down Y2K and Christopher Columbus because I grew up learning Christopher Columbus was one thing, and then I found out, oh, he was not a very nice person. And that was through the education system. So that was, I felt, you know, a legitimate, you know, for parents to come up and say, whoa, this is not right. I would put in probably the classism part. The other one is, and this is not education, but Y2K, where that was kind of a fear monger more than reality. And that's why I wrote it down, was how much of this critical race theory is fear mongering. And what I mean by that is that Y2K was brought in as planes were going to drop out of the sky and all these things. And it came out of nowhere, almost like a shock and awe. And the reality was Citibank's not going to fix some ones and zeros for real. Are you telling me, you know, the biggest banks in the world are not going to fix these things? Because I think 95% of the problem was the private sector. So anyway, and so the question is, you know, how much of this is fear mongering and how much of this is legit?
That's such a good question and a very, very good point, Jason. When this bill was being debated and discussed in the legislature, you know, I was looking for examples and I was hearing from teachers, like, we're not teaching this. And so what I've been told by our educators is that we're not teaching critical race theory. We are not teaching critical race theory. This is not occurring in our state, in our schools, in our state. The majority of our school leaders, our local superintendents and our local, you know, high school and elementary principals were saying, not a problem, pass the bill, pass the law, we're not doing it anyway. So I think your point is really well made. This isn't occurring. But for those parents that really aren't happy with some of the things that they believe their teachers are teaching, these administrative rules set up the mechanism and the processes for them to go to their locally elected school board leaders and say, do you have a process in place? Because I have a question about this and I want to be able to go through it. And so if a parent, I mean, we should empower parents. Our schools can't be whitewashing history, but we really don't want them to go in conflict with what is culturally acceptable within, you know, a school in Beulah, North Dakota, or in my hometown, in my home area. There should be a process. And so that's essentially what the rules say. They say that every school board in North Dakota needs to draft a policy that says that they're complying with the law, that they won't be teaching it. The rules say that a board has to lay out a process for families to follow if they object to any classroom instruction that they think may be critical race theory. And it gives families the right to take a look at instructional materials that they think may be teaching the theory of critical race and have an opportunity. And probably most importantly, the rules also say that the board must make sure that any district-led or district-sponsored professional development complies with the state law. And so it really is just bringing the implementation down to our local school boards to give them a structure and a process to find out the truth. Is this critical race or isn't it? And if it is, it needs to stop because it's against the law. If it isn't, everybody needs to calm down and the truth needs to be told that this is not a critical race theory violation.
Next question. I'm going to see if you can follow my intro here. I was a Catholic school boy for my elementary years, and then I went to a public school in my junior high school years, so I've had the experience of both. And in my later years, I kind of, in my 20s and 30s, I always kind of chuckled because it seemed like the folks who had people who went to private schools wanted to make them public schools, and the people who had children that went to public schools wanted to turn them into private schools. So how much of this is the church versus the state? Is that at all involved in this, where some people are bringing, you know, the word of God into this at all?
I haven't heard that, Jason. But I also think I haven't heard that in this particular instance, but in other situations, I hear what you're saying. And I've seen that as well, both in a personal and a professional realm.
Like I said, I always chuckle at it when, you know, you got somebody trying to privatize a public school and publicize a private school. But that's, hey, you know what? That's the way the world works. So, well, September 8th is the public hearing. When does school start in North Dakota? I suppose it varies across the state.
It does. Yeah. Some of our schools are starting as early as August 17th. Kids will be back in class. So, and some as late as, I believe, August 25th.
And then is there any year-round schools in North Dakota still?
There are no year-round schools. We have an increased number of students going to summer school, but we don't have year-round school. That is an idea that I have been in favor of since I myself was a school board member 15 years ago. I think the idea of year-round school is a wonderful idea. I wish more districts would explore.
I think that they're definitely going to get more into that, especially whenever you have the conversation that the 9-month school year was based on an agrarian society and we aren't farmers anymore, people start understanding the rationale behind the year-round school. Four-day schools. Were people doing that for a while in North Dakota? That's what it was, not year-round schools, right?
Right, yes. Four-day schools are, and we're actually increasing in the number of our school districts that are operating four-day school weeks.
Get out of here. For real? Yeah.
For real.
That's fabulous. So just take a minute or two and talk about what you found and the reason for that. That's awesome.
Sure. What we found is that it's a retention and a recruitment effort for teachers. It's a full day of planning. So the school building is actually open all 5 days, but that fifth day, generally Fridays, those are spent if students want to come in and get some extra one-on-one tutoring. The school is open. Child nutrition was really kind of a big concern, having a lot of our students. A lot of our children depend on school breakfast and school lunch for their meals. A lot of parents were concerned. They work 5 days a week. That would be a day of child care for those elementary students. So that's the compromise, is that the school is open. And if you want your child to come on that fifth day, there will be a team of teachers there. And the teachers kind of rotate through. And this Friday is your day to be there. Next Friday is another teacher's day to be there within the English department or the math department. And they use those days for professional development, so teachers can actually come together and learn together. As you know, the work world is changing, Jason. People even our age, we don't want to work in isolation. That's not how we thrive. So this extra day gives teachers the opportunity to work together in cooperation with each other, plan together. It also gives parents, it's reduced the attendance issues for both teachers and students, because those dental appointments or those orthodontist appointments or those physical therapy appointments for sports medicine, those are appointment days on Friday instead of, you know, taking off school and heading into town to go to your orthodontist. So it's reduced attendance issues. It's increased engagement, and we're seeing lots and lots of positives. It gives our teachers the time that they need on those Fridays to spend with those students that maybe need just a little bit of extra help, and it's just a kind of a different type of environment. So seeing positive things from it, and an increased number of our school districts are going that route.
What would be the largest school district that is doing the 4 day a week? Is it primarily rural, or are there some bigger cities doing it?
It's primarily rural.
That's what I thought.
And primarily Western North Dakota.
Oh, sure. Now that makes a lot of sense too, because of the energy activity and just some of the, just that lifestyle out there. That does make a lot of sense.
And kids are on the road less, you know, there's lots of traffic out there. And in addition to that, Montana has had a 4 day school week for, decades, since the 1970s. Mm-hmm. So the influence of Montana's school systems have influenced our Western North Dakota as well. So
I was a huge fan of the 4 day school as soon as I heard about it the first time, for a variety of reasons. And there's a lot of budgetary reasons too. I never even thought of the savings that you could possibly have just with the cafeteria and that sort of thing. Yeah, there's some people who still need the nutrition aspect and the meals and everything, but the majority probably don't. And so that's a huge savings right there. But mostly what I like about it is it kind of matches up the parents and the kids' schedules a little bit more. And I was a stay-at-home dad, and my top priority was my child, and my job was number four. So I was a single parent, and because of that, I made a list. I wrote down my son Otis, number one. Number two was my son and my relationship. Number three was my health, and number four was my career. And what I did is I made sure I could pick him up and drop him off every day, and I did it for 4 years. And I can tell you that's really difficult. Because what is it? 3:30. That's when the let out time is. And then it's like 9:30. And so it's like very, difficult to match up with the regular 9-to-5 work schedule. So I saw pretty quickly that, boy, if we can just get the work schedules and the schools to match up, and the 4 day work week does that, it does it really well. So, there's a little pitch for you. How's that?
It does. I appreciate that very much. And that's what we've heard from families. It has released some of the pressure that families feel to cram so much on those 2 days, on Saturday and Sunday. Of course, you have church on Sunday and Saturdays are filled with activities. The families have felt that the release valve has just been, the pressure valve has just been released a little bit. It's like one extra day to get those appointments done, one extra day just to hang out with my kid. Mm-hmm. There's lots of positives.
But not only that, but it changes the troubleshooting during the week of who's going to pick up this kid and how's he going to get there and how am I going to get dinner done and all these different.
Yep.
It eliminates a lot of little daily idiosyncratical troubleshooting that you don't even think about until it happens. And so anyway, if you're a large school district out there, I would run the numbers because I actually think it would work better in a bigger city than it would in the rural areas.
I thought so too. When I was the president of Mandan School Board, we had a bond issue we thought for a new elementary school, and we thought if it failed, one of our options was going to be a 4-day school week and kind of rotate kids in and out, use the same sort of space. So there's lots of opportunities. The bond issue passed and we built a new school, so we were never able to test run that. But I think we got to think differently. We're 22 years into this 21st century. We should start thinking differently with the agrarian school calendar and the 4-day school week, 4-day work week. We got to get childcare figured out, though. I think that's still a big deterrent. Families that are still in a 5-day work week, whether they're in accounting or in banking or health, they're still working 5 days. So what do they do with those children? So childcare is another big issue we should talk about sometime.
It is. And the nice part about it is, though, is that normally you can find a parent or a school chum or something like that a little bit easier when you're going to school than just finding somebody randomly 1 day a week, because the child care providers, they need the 5 days a week and everything along those lines. But the one thing that would help out, and maybe you go the green route, because it would almost take care of the buses. You wouldn't have to go out and hire bus drivers, 24/7. And because a lot of the buses would be eliminated because parents could pick up and drop their kids off on the way to work and on the way home.
It's a good thought. Yeah. Nice visiting with you, Jason.
You bet. Yeah, you take care. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
And that was the superintendent of North Dakota Schools, Kirsten Baszler. And that public meeting, again, is September 8th.